الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجبين بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ إلى الله. اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا. As we are moving closer to the day of Ashura and we passed more than half of the majalis, just some reminders and tips to keep in mind, and we will get more opportunities when hajat, du'as will be granted, will be accepted inshallah, as it was mentioned repeatedly in all these nights, thus that this majlis, breathing in this majlis is tasbih, as ma'sumeen they say. So it's all worship. So try to come in wuzu. Be in wuzu so long as you are in this majlis, which again multiplies the reward and the sawab and the chances of acceptance of dua, etc. And the other thing is that we have to have a wish list, that whatever the hajat each one of us has, have them in mind, whatever they are, just list them, have them, keep them prepared. So because whilst a person is shedding tears for Allah Billah and he prays, his du'as are accepted. It's one of those places, one of those hot spots when du'as, they get accepted quickly. So have that list in mind, and whenever you feel that that is the time when this dua of yours is going to be accepted, instead of listing all those hajat and getting away from the program, or not being able to follow the program, have that list ready, have that hyperlink ready, just double click and that will go to it. So have that list of yours prepared in your mind, and inshallah whenever from today onwards until the day of Ashura, whenever you get that opportunity, that you feel that it is the time when this dua is being accepted, double click on that list and inshallah you will get in. Even if you have forgotten any of those items, they will be safe and secure. Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, he plays an important role in the entire existence. Now, the teachings that we have, when a baby is born, the first thing, even before the baby suckles or feeds on milk, it is mustahab that you taste the dust of the grave of Abu Abdullah. It is mustahab. So that the first thing which goes into the baby's stomach is the dust of the grave of Abu Abdullah. When a person dies, again, it's the same thing, that you place a little bit of the dust in the mouth of this person. Or when hunut is being performed on the deceased, it is recommended that you mix a little bit of this turbat of Fakishifa, or the dust of the grave of Abu Abdullah, in that hunut, wipe it onto the forehead, a little bit on the nose, and in the palms where this sajda was being performed. So we find that throughout our life, from the day we are born until the day we die, there is a connection with Abu Abdullah all the way through. When Abu Abdullah was a toddler and he couldn't speak properly, Rasulullah was saying his prayers. He said Allahu Akbar. He wanted to copy the grandfather and say Allahu Akbar. He couldn't say it correctly. Rasulullah repeats once again. It was a little bit better than the first time. Says Allahu Akbar, and the seventh time when he said Abu Abdullah Hussein, this young toddler, said that Allahu Akbar correctly. And then he says it is mustahab, becomes part of the religion, that before you start your prayers, recite, say these seven takbirah. Why? Because Abu Abdullah, he, that again was connected. When it comes to your prayers, says it is mustahab that you place your forehead in sajda, again on the dust of the grave of Abu Abdullah from Karbala. Amazing riwayat we have regarding this sajda on the dust of the grave of Abu Abdullah, says that when you do that one sajda on that mohr, on that sajdagah, which is made from the earth of Karbala, it enlightens the seven layers of the earth, that one sajda. Furthermore, Imam says that it enlightens the seven skies towards the heavens, that just one sajda for Abu Abdullah. So Abu Abdullah, he plays a very important role. A huge, big bonus, a blessing has been given to us, for which we are thankful to Allah, and we ask Allah that this love, this devotion that He has given us, He has blessed us with, may that never ever be taken away from us. May that be in this dunya, barzakh or qiyamah, even for a moment. Marhum Ayatullah al-Uzma, Shaykh Abdul Karim Ha'iri, the founder of the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom, he has his durus kharij, and every day prior to the durus being started, there is someone who recites Masa'ib for Abu Abdullah for a few minutes. The students, they come and object, say that we come here to study fiqh and usul, not listen to Masa'ib every day. He in reply says that whatever I have is from Abu Abdullah. So that will be the program, and these Masa'ib will be recited every day. And then he says that when I was young, it was as such that I fell ill. Everyone had lost hope. I was laid down facing Qibla. That cloth also was on my face. Everyone had declared that he is dead. There was this crying around me. And all of a sudden I see that these angels, they have come to take my soul. And there I seek refuge and ask Abu Abdullah to help. Says when I sought refuge in Abu Abdullah and said to help that I haven't done anything in this dunya, allow me, give me an opportunity so that I could do something for you. These angels who had taken the soul and were ascending to the heavens, to the skies, say that send him back. Abu Abdullah has mediated. That life was given back to him. Life was given back, he establishes this Hawza in Qom, from which you see today all that benevolence worldwide, it's again through Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. All these masail being mentioned everywhere in every season, the revolution and whatever, it's been credited to the account of this marhum Sheikh Abdul Karim Ha'iri, again as a result of the mediation of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Imam Zaman alayhi salam, he resembles Abu Abdullah al-Hussein the most. When he returns, he will return with the slogans of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. When his call will be heard by everyone, when he will inform everyone, again that information and that call will be in the name of Hussein. So all this is the benefit that we have for Abu Abdullah and Hussein, and anything which is related to Abu Abdullah that lives, survives forever. In Karbala there was a severe storm, a hurricane, and people, they were scared as to what is going to happen. They come to the noble ulama of at that time and they say that, what shall we do? the winds, they are so fierce, as if all these palm trees will be uprooted. He says that as a result of the landslide, one of the graves of the Ashab of Imam Hussein has opened. The winds, you see that they have gone so fierce and wild, that is the reason. Says the best of the people to go and to close that grave and everything will be fine. They come to the graves of the Shuhada in Karbala and they find, as it was mentioned, as a result of a landslide, one of the graves of one of the Shuhada is open and a leg of his is out of the grave. Amazed to see that after 1,000 years that have passed, it's fresh, as if just now laid to rest. So anything which is connected to Aba Abdullah, those Ashab, all of that lives and that is going to endure forever. And anything which is related to Aba Abdullah in whatever form, that again the same rule applies. We talked about beauty yesterday, when Hazrat Zainab alayha salam, in reply, to that Mal'oon said, Ma ra'aytu illa jameela, that whatever I saw in Karbala was beautiful. So in continuation to the same topic, we come to this topic that we have to have a pure eye, an eye that is clean. It was mentioned again the other day that al-jannatu, the paradise, la yadkhuluha illa tayyib, that only that what is pure will enter the paradise. An eye which is pure will enter the paradise. An eye which is pure will be able to see the Imam of time. Why? Because he is all pure. Purity attracts purity. Purity. So one of these issues that we have to have a pure eye, a chaste eye, the topic of haya comes up, and that is chastity, which is among the highest values which is recognized in Islam. And the opposite of haya, it's indecency, immorality, which is condemned in Islam. Now this haya, if a person possesses it, it controls the desires, the sexual desires in an individual. So which have to be controlled at all times. And with wisdom, it removes indecency away from a person and keeps that person on the right path. So haya, if a person possesses, that haya commands not to be immoral, not to avail immorality in the community, not to tempt others, may that be the male or the female. Again, when we talk about haya, chishm charani, or as they say, although the first step to deviation, a lustful look has to be prevented. A look with intentions that are bad, that has to be protected. Looking at a non-mahram, it's haram. With a sinful look, it is definitely haram. Without a sinful look, again, mujtahideen, fuqaha, they say that it is an ihtiyat wajib, that you have to refrain from that sight. So looking at other women, it is that desire of shaitan, and riwayah, they say that that sight of yours to other women, that sight is that arrow, and the bow for that arrow is your eye. And that shaitan attacks an individual through that haram, by that bow, which is that eyeball and the arrow, being the look, and he deceives. The Prophet says that looking at non-mahram are the poisonous arrows of shaitan. Quran says, protect your eyes, protect your looks. In a hadith, our fifth Imam says that a young lad from Ansar in Medina, he met a woman, he saw a woman. And in those days, hijab was not like the hijab that we have today. Hijab in those days, the ears were an exception, they were not included in the hijab. The neck also wasn't part of the hijab. The rest of the body was to be covered, like we have today. This young lad, he looks at this girl and follows the girl, and wherever she goes, he is carried away behind that girl. And it so happens that there is the wall and a bone sticking out of the wall. He hurts his face, wounds, and starts bleeding. Comes to Rasulullah to say, this is what has happened. And before he reveals that to Rasulullah, Rasulullah says, what have you done to your face? Why is it bleeding? And then he explains, this is what had happened. I got carried away with the looks of that girl, and I hurt myself with that bone sticking out of the wall. And there wahy is revealed. قُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ يَغُضُّوا مِنْ أَبْصَارِهِمْ وَيَحْفَظُوا فُرُوجَهُمْ. That, O Prophet, inform the mu'mineen, say to the mu'mineen, cast down their looks, their sights, their eyes. مِنْ أَبْصَارِهِمْ وَيَحْفَظُوا فُرُوجَهُمْ, and protect their private parts. So that ayah was revealed over there. So we have to protect our eyes. Now when it comes to protection of eyes, we may be able to protect them up to a certain extent. Some riwayat say that the eye is that part of the body which is thankless and which is the most graceless. Why? Every other part of the body, if for example food is not given to your stomach, it will tolerate, and whenever it is given to it, it will accept. But the eye, when the eye wants to have a look at something, it has that look. No matter what it does, either it might not look straight away, but behind the back or sideways, leftways, it will have that look and saturate itself. In a hadith, Ma'soom says that the moment we protect our eyes, and the moment we see a negative image, a lustful picture, or someone without hijab, or uncovered faces, or uncovered pictures, says that the moment you see them, just switch your sight from it towards the skies and don't look at it. Or close your eyes. Ma'soom says, before you have opened your eyes, Allah has already created and vetted you with all those hoors in the barzakh, in the hereafter, before you've opened your eyes. As a result of that protection, protecting your eyes, Marhum Sheikh Rajab Ali Khayyat, he says, there was a taxi driver in Tehran, sits in the cab, and there was a beautiful girl who got in the cab. He wants to have a look at the girl, protects his eyes, says, no, I'll just keep myself under control. Then says, okay, let her sit, I'll look at her in the mirror. Then again, there is a battle with him in himself. Says, no, I'll just control myself. I won't look at her. But shaitan, he constantly tempts. No, there will be another opportunity, you can look at her. Says, okay, now that when she's going to come down and pay me, I'll quickly have a look at her. Again, he controls himself, does not look. And that evening when it is time for Maghrib prayers, he goes to say his prayers with Shaykh Rajab Ali Khayyat. Now, no one knows what has happened in this cab. Shaykh, after his prayers, comes to this lad and says that because of that sight which you protected, you did not have a look at that haram, Allah has already prepared what and what not for you in barzakh, and they are all waiting for you, just for that protection. Now, when it comes to this protection of eyes, we have to be careful of what we wear. Especially nowadays, you've got these skinny jeans that have come up. We should be away from them. When we talk about clothing, it should be something which is modest, something which is decent, and that is what is praised, that is what is described, that is what is defined by Ma'soomeen. Anything which is decent to you, wear it. These skinny jeans, don't wear them. May that be the boys, may that be the girls, brothers, sisters, boys and girls, to everyone. So we have to wear something which is decent, something which does not attract. Now if someone, because of the clothing and the attire which we wear, gets carried away and falls into haram, don't think that we haven't done anything. We have also contributed in that guna, we have contributed in that sin, we have contributed a lot in that person falling into haram. So, man a'ana, whosoever helps another person in him falling into haram, may that be by a look, may that be by a sight, in whatever way, in whatever manner, we are part of that entity. So when we talk about a pure eye, all that is part of it. Every eye on the day of judgment will cry, exception are three eyes. An eye that wept in the fear of God, an eye that was protected from a non-mahram, an eye that stayed awake, protecting Islam, safeguarding the religion. Now when this eye is protected from haram, from every indecency, this eye sees wonders, amazing things, which we regularly don't do. What we see in this dunya, it's just a limited sight that we have. The colors that we see, they are all restricted, all limited. The voices that we hear, we can't hear certain voices, you have to use devices. You want to see something more than what you can see, you have to seek help from all these tools. Ma'asumeen, they say, that if you protect your eyes, you will see wonders. Now what these wonders are? If you protect your eyes, says that you will have a relaxed and a tranquil heart. The Prophet says, غُذُّوا أَبْصَارَكُمْ تَرَوْنَ الْعَجَائِبِ. Protect your eyes and you will see amazing things. Elsewhere, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Says that man ghadda tarfahu araha qalbah, one who protected his looks has comforted his heart. In addition to that, to those amazing things which these eyes will see, one who protected his looks, he has comforted his heart. One who sees a non-mahram and quickly switches his looks away, it was mentioned, or he looks at the sky, before he comes back, opens his eyes, Allah, he has already availed everything for him in the hereafter. Elsewhere, Ma'asum says that another benefit you will find as a result of this protection is tasting the sweetness of Iman. Now many a times we don't feel the sweetness of Iman, what exactly it means. The Prophet says that a look at a non-mahram is the poisonous arrow of shaitan which he shoots. And Quran talks on many occasions, and the best of the examples that could be mentioned in Quran is that of Prophet Yusuf as a result of that protection which he observed. All those blessings were provided to him as a result and a reward of that protection and keeping away and distancing from that haram. So chastity is for chastity. It's a very delicate issue that we see in riwayat, that if someone crosses the limits and pollutes the dignity of others, his own dignity, that also will be polluted. The Prophet says that one who has faith in God, he must never sleep in a place where he can hear the breathing of a non-mahram. So delicate it is. Says that if you are in a place and there is a non-mahram, now this has no exception, this rule. You can't say that person can and that person cannot. No, exception to this rule, no one, only ma'asumeen can keep themselves safe. A place where there is a girl, or a place wherein there is a non-mahram and there is no one else, the third person over there is shaitan. The ruling is that it is haram for you to stay in a place where there is no one but that non-mahram present over there. So, if that eye is protected, all those wonders will be seen, all those benefits will be sought. And the punishment for a bad look, in addition to the afflictions he would see, the Prophet says that on the day of judgment, when the creation will all be gathered to give an account, and until this person is waiting for his account to be given, in that transit period, in that waiting period, his eyes will be filled with nails of fire just because of that lustful and that haram look which this person had during his lifetime. The other thing which we talked about day before yesterday was on khawf, and the second issue was raja. Khawf was fear, fright, and there were kinds of khawf that were mentioned, and the other thing was raja, that is to have hope. And the instructions given to us are that we have to move between this khawf and raja. You have to possess that fright and hope in yourself. You can't only fear, not have hope in God. You can't only have hope in God and not fear. What we see today is that with an excuse that we have hope in God, we can do whatever we want, that hope is no hope. Or with the fear that Allah, we don't have hope in God, it's all fear and fright, that too is not accepted. In that hadith which was recited the other day, say that when you have this fear and hope in yourself, neither of them should increase. It's a balanced existence of both fear and hope. We don't commit sins, why? Because of the fear of the punishment, the wrath in the hereafter. Now, why are we hopeful for the paradise? It's based upon that hope that we have. Khawf, or that fear, it means that worry which bothers you of a forthcoming mishap, the arrival of which is not sure. We have a khawf which is praised, that hope of Allah, His greatness, His justice, that is praised, that we have to have that hope. And sometimes a khawf we have that is for death, that a person is scared of his death, he is afraid to die. Again, that is praised, that a person has, even the prophets, we find in riwayat that they were scared, they were afraid of the death. So that fright exists. When it comes to living in this world, we find, we ask Allah to give us a lengthy life, a long life. Why do we need a long life? If it is so that we sit with our grandchildren and watch movies and eat popcorn, that is no good. Because after a while, when a person gets old, in Surah Yasin says that وَمَنْ نُعَمِّرْهُ نُنَكِّسْهُ فِي الْخَلْقِ, that whosoever gets old, he will just be broken down, he will get weak, and then after all perish. So getting old means it comes with a package of all these illnesses, diseases, leg ache, back ache, what and all, what not. So long age with all those aches and pains, it's of no use. If we ask Allah for a long age, that long age with a lot of faza'il in it, with a lot of merit and virtues in it, as a result that we could get closer to God, reduce the distance between us and Him, that is praised, that is good. But a long age without this, it's not good. Our riwayat, they say that a person, if he has not corrected himself and he has reached the age of 40, after that it's going to be a tough time. Furthermore, there is another hadith which says that by the age of 40, if you have not corrected yourself, shaitan comes to us, he places his hand on our heads, pats us and says, bless you. May my father, that is shaitan saying that, may my father be sacrificed to you, that the doors of salvation have now closed and they have shut on you. So before the age of 40, we have to correct. If there are shortcomings, now all this, a lesson to myself first, that we have to correct ourselves. No matter what wrong, great and small, we have to correct it. And these doors of tawbah, which are always open, and especially in these forthcoming nights, if there are shortcomings and wrongdoings in us, we have to put that aside. Quran says that إِنَّمَا يَخْشَى اللَّهُ مِنْ عِبَادِهِ الْعُلَمَاءِ, that it is those who know, they are afraid of Allah, they fear Allah. The Prophet also says the same, says that I fear Allah the most. The lowest level of this fear is refraining from sins. That if we fear Allah and we are sincere in this fear, we have to put the sins away. Sins means all that He has said to do, if we don't do it, it's a sin. All that He has asked us not to do, if we do it, that is a sin. That is the lowest level. A higher level of that khawf is that makruh should be put aside. The next level up is shubahat. If, for example, there is a food and you don't know whether or not it's halal, so leave it, don't eat it. Although the fatwa of all of the mujtahideen is that if you don't know, then you can consume. But because it is shubha and we are not certain as to it being halal, put it away. That is another level of khawf. So all these are the different levels of khawf that have been defined by our ulama based upon riwayah. So fear of Allah is the best fear which a person can possess. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam says that Jibreel never came to me but that he was shaken and scared. Says Rasulullah that I asked Jibreel once that why don't I ever see Mikael happy? In reply he says that ever since Allah created the hell, the fire, Mikael never was happy, never laughed. Prophet Dawood, he committed At-Tarki Awla. As a result of that, he cried for the duration of his life. Once he was reminded of his Tarki Awla, he just left away to the deserts to weep and cry. Prophet Yahya says that when he stood for prayers, as a result of his crying, the trees and the stones, they cried with Prophet Yahya. That is that fear. Zakariya alayhi salam says that his father fainted at seeing the crying of his son. That is due to the fear. Now with that extensive crying that he had, his cheeks were all wounded as a result of the tears that had fallen on his cheeks so much. So why don't we fear? Why are we not afraid? It was mentioned that the worst fear is the fear of a bad end. So for us to have that fear and fright, we have to make ourselves stronger. Now this strength is sought by all these different, a variety of things that we have. It could be through this majlis, it could be through prayers, it could be through du'as, it could be through ziyarat. These ma'arif that we have, the usul that we have, the aqaid that we have faith in, we have to strengthen them day by day. We have to remind all of these to us, to ourselves. For example, recitation of Dua Adila. Dua Adila is recited by the bedside of a person who is giving away his life. Or a person who has died, you go and recite the Dua Adila by him. Now that Dua Adila will benefit if he had some prior information about that Dua. If someone had no information of what the dua is talking about the aqaid that we have, no matter how much you recite, it will have effect, but that miraculous effect which it should have, it will not have. So if we want all these things to have effect on us, we have to make ourselves strong. There is a hadith which says that sakaratul maut, that is the pains of death, they are so strong that at seeing those pains, a person who was strong, if he was not strong enough in his aqaid, he will forget all of his aqaid and end up as a kafir. So sakaratul maut, they are so strong, as a result of that a person could end up as kafir. Marhum Shah Abadi, the ustad of Irfan and Akhlaq of Marhum Imam Khomeini. Now this is during his life. A person, one of his students called Sayyid Mahdi, he says that I woke up to say my Salatul Layl, my nocturnal prayers. And as the washrooms were in the yard that housed that pond where they used to performed their wuzu was in the yard. He says, I came out of my room, there was a flight of steps leading to the yard, and I see that that yard of the house of mine is not the regular yard. It is as if like the shrines of one of the ma'sumeen, with all these hundreds of rooms around it. And see, he says that when I come down, I hear someone crying loud. And I see that this cry is coming from one of the rooms from this yard. Says I followed from where this cry of this person is coming from. And there he comes and sees that the door is locked. And from the grooves of the door, he sees that there are two persons and another person as if he has been half buried in the ground. And these two persons around him, they are dumping something in the mouth of this person. He was scared to see it. He knocks, yells for them to open the door to save him. And then the two persons, were angels, and that one person, he then rushes to his ustad's house, offers his fajr prayers, and comes to the ustad. Now he's knocking at the door to open the door. He's restless to see his ustad. Now ustad from inside the door, Sayyid Mahdi, what's up? Why are you so much worried? They showed you something. It doesn't mean that you have to be so restless. Ustad opens the door. He throws himself into the arm and hugs him. Says, what did I see? What was that? Says, the friend of yours in Tehran, he's dying. He was giving away his life. The scene which you saw was the vision of his death. That person, he lived and dwelled on riba, on jury, on interest. And that is that painful death that he had, that he was departing from this world. So, a'mal, they have that form. Every action of us takes that form. And majority of those to whom the paradise is assigned are those who by default, by nature, are good people, are good persons. Or their essence or their inclination, it's towards good. Doing good, being good, keeping away from evil. That is those who will be assigned the heaven. So, that was fear. That we have to have fear of the hereafter, fear from the evil of our own selves, fear of the haram, fear of the sins, fear of the hellfire. That fear has to exist in us. The second thing is hope. We have to have hope in God as well. Quran says that, Ya ibadi alladhina asrafu ala anfusihim, O my servants, those who have been unjust to yourselves, لا تقنطوا من روح من رحمة الله, that never be in despair from the mercy of Allah. Because the mercy of Allah is greater than everything. If we have wronged, if we have committed sins, the mercy of Allah is greater than those sins. That is, if we have mercy, if we have hope in Allah, He will definitely forgive us. If we lose hope in Allah, Quran says that is the greatest sin. وَلَا تَيْأَسُوا مِنْ رَوْحِ اللَّهِ, that is, you must never be in despair from having hope in Allah. وَلَا يَيْأَسُوا مِنْ رَوْحِ اللَّهِ إِلَّا الْقَوْمُ الْكَافِرُونَ, it's only those kuffar, those who have no faith in God, who have no hope in God. So, being hopeful in Allah, it's one of the praised qualities and one of the requirements that we have to possess. The Prophet says that on the Day of Judgment, Allah will ask His servants, why did you do this wrong? Says, why did you not refrain from that haram? If in reply he said that, God, I had hope in you, and having hope in you, and was scared of the people, Allah will say, I forgave his sin because of that hope which he had in me. So that hope has to be there. We have to have hope in him. Our fifth Imam says that, I saw in the notes of my grandfather Amir al-Mu'mineen that the Prophet from his minbar said, now these are all private notes which Masumin had access to each other, says that my grandfather in his notes says that by him that is by the God, and apart from him there is none. All the benevolence that is given to a mu'min is based on the hope, on that husn zan that he has in God. If his hope in God is a lot of benevolence will be given to him. A lot of bounties will be given to him. The more the hope he has in him, the more the optimism he has in God, the more he will benefit. As a result of that, he will be well-mannered. As a result of that, he will refrain from all the sins, from backbiting, etc. Because of that hope he has in God. And then he continues and says that by God, there is no God besides him. After repentance, God never punishes a believer, but that he is pessimistic in God. He has no hope in God. So has no hope in God is being bad-mannered, ill-mannered. And that he backbites a mu'min. So we have to have this hope in Allah. If you look into this dua, Kumail, which we recite every other week, says, Ilahi man li ghayruk. God, who do we have apart from yourself? We don't have anyone but you. It's only you. And then the Imam says that, Irham man ra'su malihir raja. Have mercy on someone whose capital is hope. If we were to invest anything before Allah, that investment of ours, that capital of ours, that asset of ours is hope. The more the hope, the more we benefit. So we have to have that hope in Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. Things that help increase this merit is that we ponder into the verses of Quran, the angels, the prophets, they all seek forgiveness for mu'mineen, and their dua is an accepted dua. Quran says that wal malaikatu yusabbihuna bihamdi rabbihim wa yastaghfiruna liman fil ard. If we have hope in Allah, if we have hope in the prophets, in the angels, and this ayah that was just recited says that the angels, they glorify, they praise the Almighty, and then they ask for forgiveness for us. Or yesterday it was mentioned that someone who cries for Abu Abdullah and Hussein, Imam says that so long as that person is crying, I ask Allah to forgive him. Not just that, says that I ask my parents, my grandfather, my brother and my sister, all of them, to ask Allah to forgive us. So that is hope. So we have a lot of hope in these majalis that we get together to mourn and to cry for Abu Abdullah. Tonight we'll talk a bit about Aun and Muhammad, these two sons of Zainab al-Kubra. She has, from her children, two of them were with her in Karbala, and they seek shahadat in the presence of her brother, the Imam of time, Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. And again, it's her remarkable education, her adab, and it's her fana, it's her submission, her selflessness, that she sacrifices everything that she possesses, sacrifices everything of hers and her children for her brother Abu Abdullah. She sees nothing but Hussein. Only Hussein she sees. For her, the primary concern is Hussein. Children come secondary. Herself is secondary. She just wants Hussein. As if she is to remember them, Aun and Muhammad, or mentions them, it will be an insult that if she was to remember her children on the day of Ashura, or if she is to sit and cry for her children, she thinks that is going to be a disgrace, that is going to be an insult, because she thinks that they are nothing compared to Abu Abdullah. If she has given away her sons for Abu Abdullah, it's as if she hasn't done anything at all. That is how she feels. For her, the primary concern is Abu Abdullah. And we see that on the day of Ashura, when the two sons of Zainab al-Kubra were brought to her, She doesn't go to get them. She doesn't cry on them. But when the body of Ali Akbar falls and is brought to the camps, she says, Ya Khayyata Wabna Khayya, that, O my brother, O my brother's son. That is that primary concern that she has to her brother. She is so much drowned in the love of her Imam that she wouldn't do the faintest thing which upsets him. She thinks that if she cries for her sons, if she remembers them, Abu Abdullah will be hurt. How? That my sister is disturbed by the giving away and sacrificing of her sons. To avoid those thoughts in the mind of Abu Abdullah, she doesn't remember them. This again, the sons too, they are proud of the mother. That what a loyal mother they have, so loyal to the Imam of time. And they would have said that, mother, we are proud of you, that we have a mother like you, Zainab. Had you wept on us, that would have disturbed Abu Abdullah. How wonderful was your performance, they say. Although our bodies, they have departed, or although our souls have departed, the bodies were left in Karbala. They say that we were a witness, mother. We saw how you were lashed and whipped on that day. Says that we wish we were with you. We saw the misery you faced. Our souls were a witness to see what had unfolded on you. Now these two sons of Zainab al-Kubra, in this beautiful poem, this Sha'ir says that Zainab on qafil salar Hussein, Zainab on garmi bazar Hussein, Zainab on dukht Ali mir Arab, tarbiyat yafte mehr o adab, Zainab the commander of the caravan of Hussein, Zainab the drive, the motto of Hussein, Zainab the daughter of the chief of Arabs, raised in the cradles of morals and adab. Deep dar Karbala Khusruvedin, mande tanha baram qawme la'in. She saw in Karbala the faith and its deen is deserted by a nation evil and mean. Do pesar tosh chup maho khurshi, har dura rakht shahadat kushi. گو خواهم که سرفراز شوی با شهیدان همه دمساز شوی هر دو گفتند که ای مام غمین گر پذیرد چه بود بهتر از این مادر این نکته ز طفلان چه شنید در زاده زهرا بدوی. She comes and says to her sons that it would be nice if you sacrifice yourself to your uncle. The children, they say that, mother, we would love to do that, but uncle, he would not accept. He doesn't accept. They go to the brother, to the uncle. They start pleading. He wouldn't accept. Now again, this was the beauty of Abu Abdullah and Hussein, that when it was his own immediate family members, whenever they came on the day of Ashura, permission was granted immediately. For example, Ali Akbar, when he comes to seek permission without any delay, without any hesitation. But when others, they came and sought permission, he never gave permission so easily. May that be Qasim, may that be the sons of Zainab. It was after all that pleading. Now even then he did not give that permission. Zainab, she comes and says that, brother, by my mother, allow them to sacrifice themselves for you. He gives them the permission, and when they set off, he is disturbed that what is going to happen to my sister if the bodies they come back. Now over here, the performance of Zainab, it's much more amazing. She is praying in her heart that, God, don't send them back. Let them sacrifice themselves for Allah. All other members, they are praying for their safe return. They set off to the battlefront. And the rajas that they have, the slogan that these two brothers have, they say, Amiri Husaynun wa ni'mal Amir, Sururu Fadil Bashir al-Nabi. says that my chief for sure is my master Hussein. The joy of the Prophet who is Bashir and Nabi. The joy of Ali and Fatima indeed. Is there anyone like Hussein who could be a match for him? No one. With that slogan they set off and they fight. And when they collapse, when they fell down and the bodies are brought to the camps, Zainab, she never turns up to cry on the two sons, on her own two sons. We talked about hope, that we have to have hope in the mercy of Allah. We have to have hope in Ahlul Bayt. We have to have hope in these majalis, these tears that are shed for Abu Abdullah. Because without hope, we are destroyed, we are ruined. Marhum Ayatullah Milani, one of the Maraji Taqleed of the 1950s, he says that during his time, there were these two Maddahs who used to travel to Najaf, who lived in Najaf, recite in Farsi. A group comes from Bombay to Najaf. There they see these two brothers reciting for Abu Abdullah so beautifully. They invite them to come to Bombay. Now the reason for mentioning this is that we have to have hope in these majalis. And whatever acquaintance we have now, that acquaintance will remain with us in Barzakh, that acquaintance will remain with us in Qiyamah. And the stronger this bond we have with Ahlul Bayt, the stronger we will benefit, the more we will benefit in the hereafter. Says that these two brothers were invited to Bombay. Now how again they recited, in what language, that too, it's another mystery. When it comes to Abu Abdullah and Hussein, when it comes to Ahlul Bayt, when it comes to reciting for them, it is that language of love. That language of love needs no words, needs no terminology. They recite in Bombay, and once in a while they were invited. In one of these trips, the two brothers, when they reach Bombay, they see a group setting off for Hajj. The younger brother says to the elder brother that we are mustatir and Hajj is wajib on us. The elder brother says that, but we have committed, we have to recite. He says, reciting is mustahab, Hajj is wajib. There is a little debate between the two brothers. The younger brother says that I am going for Hajj and I'll come back as soon as I can, I'll join you and recite the rest of the days with you. He says, okay. Now he goes, travels for Hajj, he comes back, it's the last few days of the month of Safar. The welcoming at the seaport was different to what it used to be before. And then he found out that the brother has died, the elder brother. Now he is worried and also in grief and sorrow that as to why his brother died over here, far from the homeland, no one to cry and weep for him. And on top of that, he hasn't performed his Hajj. He prays and asks Allah to create a communication between him and his brother so that he could see what is happening with him, what has happened, how he departed. In this communication that was created between him and Barzakh, says, tell me, where are you? How are you? How did you end? Where did you go? The brother says that everything was a mess. I departed with pain. My departing from this world, those sakarat were in pain. Says, why was all that? Says, because of not performing that one Hajj. And then he says that, where are you now? He says, now I'm in a better place. But when I ended up, I was taken to the worst cells in Barzakh. Because we have a Jahannam which is in Barzakh. Jahannam which is going to be in the hereafter, that will be after Qiyamah. Says, I was taken to the cell, but because my acquaintance in this dunya was reciting for Abu Abdullah, making people cry, crying for him, for Ahlul Bayt, the two angels, they came and I was assigned a worse place in Barzakh. They come, they take me, dragging me from this cell to the other, And as it was my habit that I cried for Hazrat Zahra, says that I started crying. Said that daste mano inayato lutfo atay Fatima. Qalbi mano mahabbato ruz jazay Fatima. That this is my hand that has extended towards the grace and the bestowals of Fatima. This is my heart which is filled with her love and the day of reward of Fatima. Be bazl dast Fatima, be khak fay Fatima, manam gedaye Fatima, manam gedaye Fatima. That by the bestowals of the hands of Fatima, by the dust of the feet of Fatima, I am a beggar of Fatima, I am a beggar of Fatima. رشته مهر فاطمه سوی خدا کشد مرا دل به ولاش دادم تا به کجا کشد مرا. Chains of love of Fatima drags me towards Allah. Now that I've surrendered myself to Fatima, I don't care where I will be dragged to, where I will be taken to. Says that agar ata kunad yaad bala kishad mara, if it's afflictions and pains that are awaiting for me, pai kurun nemi naham as dareku ye Fatima, I will never leave this lane of Fatima. Manam geda ye Fatima, manam geda ye Fatima. Now, because his acquaintance in this dunya was all these recitations, says when I was reciting this poem, this qasida for Hazrat Zahra, as it was my acquaintance, all of a sudden she appeared, says, what is it? Says, Zahra, help. I have a shortfall in my performance. Says, what is that? Hajj hasn't been done. She comes to Amirul Mu'mineen with this maddah, with those two angels. Now Amirul Mu'mineen is Qasimun Nari wal Jannah, the distributor of the hell and the heaven. Says, Ya Ali, help. Before Hazrat Zahra, Ali is all respect. Says, yes Zahra, what can I do? Says, this is a maddah of ours, someone who has recited and served us, cried for us, made others cry for us. He is having a shortfall in his performance, he needs help. Amirul Mu'mineen says, I can't do anything. Instructions given to me are clear that someone who dies not performing a Hajj, mata Yahudiyan aw Nasraniyan, someone who has died not performing a Hajj has died as a Jew or a Christian. I can't do anything. Says, Ali, do something. He is again taken back to the same cell. He again starts reciting the same qasida. Daste mano inayato lutfu ataye Fatima. Until the end, she comes again. Says, now what? Help. Amirul Mu'mineen can't do anything. Says, Mahdi, my son. Imam Mahdi appears there and then says, yes, grandma, what can I do? Says, he is a lover of ours, he has served us, he has a shortfall in his performance. Mahdi, I want you to perform a Hajj on behalf of this Maddah of mine this year, so that he is saved. He is saved. He also does it. And then his elder brother says, as a result of that Hajj of the Imam of time, I found salvation. I sought that salvation. This question may come to your mind, that why is it that we say that Imam al-Asr, he is in Hajj every year. Like you and me, just one Hajj is wajib on him. Why does he have to perform a Hajj every year? It is as if he is making up the shortfall of Mu'mineen who have a shortfall. That is that hope we have to have in Ahlul Bayt. The more the hope we have, the more we will benefit. Ala la'natullah على القوم الكافرين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. إلهي بحق الزهراء وأبيها وبعدها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها. Double click on your haja. يا الله 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 يا الله. إلهي forgive us all the wrong that we have done. Allah waive it. We repent sincerely. Give us the opportunity to be good persons better than before. Ya Allah, whatever shortfall we have in our performance report, help us to correct it, to make it up. Our children, protect them from every evil. Our eyes, protect them from every haram. Our stomachs, protect them from every evil. Ya Allah, all the wishes, desires, hajat of mu'mineen, whatever they are, grant them. Every good which every noble and good requested from you, right till now, grant that to each one of us. All those who have departed, all those who have hopes in these majalis, O God, give them a share of the reward from this majlis. Ya Allah, all those who are ill and ailing, grant them shifa. Give us a long age in the service of the Imam of Time. Hasten the reappearance of the Imam. Count us among his true servants, among his supporters, and those who seek martyrdom in his service. Martyr Hussein.